Therapy Notes is the highest rated EHR, practice management, and billing software for mental health professionals. Its all-in-one platform is designed to streamline all aspects of your practice, from connecting with clients via secure messages to scheduling, notes, billing, and more. You can trust Therapy Notes has you covered. And one of the best parts? 24/7 customer service with a live person. It's beyond easy to get help over the phone or by email at any time of day from their knowledgeable and friendly representatives. The best time to give Therapy Notes a try is now. Sign up for your free trial by going to therapynotes.com, clicking Start My Free Trial, and accessing your first 2 months free with the promo code CHAT. See why Therapy Notes is the most trusted EHR for behavioral health professionals today. Therapy Chat Podcast, episode 489.
This is the Therapy Chat Podcast with Laura Reagan, LCSWC. The information shared in this podcast is not a substitute for seeking help from a licensed mental health professional. And now, here's your host, Laura Reagan, LCSWC.
Hi, welcome back to Therapy Chat. I'm your host, Laura Reagan, and today I'm bringing you a conversation with Michelle Renee from Cuddlist. We had a really interesting conversation that brought up a lot of feelings for me. We were talking about intimacy, emotional, physical and sexual intimacy, sexual trauma, attachment, wounds, touch, boundaries. There were so many topics that we covered in this conversation. And I met Michelle at Psychotherapy Networker earlier this year, and I didn't quite understand exactly what Cuddlist was or why cuddle therapy would be valuable or needed. I was kind of like, ooh. So I was asking her everything I could think of about cuddle therapy and who it's for and how it can help and what it can do. And we just had a really interesting conversation. So can't wait for you to hear it. And I wanted to quickly tell you that we are coming up to August, and August is the 10-year anniversary of Therapy Chat. So keep listening and watching for the exciting celebrations we're going to have. I always struggle to celebrate the milestones. Sometimes the Therapy Chat's birthday just sneaks up on me, but with 10 years, I feel like that's something I really need to make a big deal about, because 10 years is not nothing. Most podcasts end in 6 months. So I'm very, very excited about that and to tell you what new ideas are coming about for the next decade of Therapy Chat. So thank you as always for listening and enjoy my conversation with Michelle Renee from Cuddlist. Hi, welcome back to Therapy Chat. I'm your host, Laura Reagan. And today I'm happy to be here with Michelle Renee from Cuddlist. Michelle, thank you so much for being my guest today on Therapy Chat.
I am delighted to be here and get a little bit more time to connect with you.
Me too. We ran into each other at the Psychotherapy Networker symposium this year, and I guess I had maybe heard of Cuddlist, like just the name maybe, or possibly not even the name when I met you. But since we met and briefly talked, I've really been, it's just the wheels have been turning in my mind about all of the potential that what you're doing has, and, you know, as a therapist, how I could recommend it to people. So I want to get into what Cuddlist is, what you all do, why, how it helps. But before we do, let's just start off with you telling our audience a little bit more about who you are and what you do.
Wonderful. So my name is Michelle Renee. I use she, her pronouns. I'm based in San Diego, but I've lived in Michigan and Baltimore doing this work. And so I still have a pretty robust practice out of the Baltimore, DC area that I come back to about quarterly. I've used lots of different names of my work, but ultimately I started with Cuddlist back in 2015, learning how to be a professional cuddler. And now I'm working a lot in supporting clients with childhood sexual assault backgrounds, things that are more on the trauma end that we don't think about per se when we think about, hey, maybe you should check out cuddle therapy, right? It's not the usual draw for that crowd, but there's such an interesting overlap. So as I've been doing the work, my ability to hold a different space has really grown in capacity because of the work that I've done on myself. And kind of like I had a therapist say, this work has really kind of supersized your healing process post-divorce. And so I can see the correlation between my own personal journey and the depth of the kind of work that I get to do in this platonic space.
Well, I can't wait to hear more about that. And, you know, it's funny you said that sexual trauma is not what most people think about when they think of professional cuddling, because that's exactly what I think about being a trauma therapist and also someone who specializes in sexual trauma and a survivor. It's like, wait a second, cuddling with people? Hold on. Like, you know, as soon as I hear that, I'm like, whoa, whoa, you know, all the things that could go wrong. And so that was what, you know, my initial reaction was when I heard about Cuddlist or when I met you. I can't remember. I mean, I feel like now that I've known about it for a long time, but that was only
March.
3 months ago. So yeah, if I had heard about it, I definitely didn't know very much. And the main thing I wanted to hear from you right away is like, well, what do you do about if sexual trauma comes up since it's so prevalent? But we'll get into that. Let's just start with, what's your role in Cuddlist and what is Cuddlist?
Yeah, so I was lucky to run into Cuddlist when they first launched in 2015. Boy, has it changed. I ended up becoming their operations manager from like 2016 to 2020. I stepped away during COVID to kind of work on my own private practice and just take a break because touch wasn't happening during that time. And
right.
I kind of got an opportunity to just kind of take a break. And I came back in 2023 as an advisory board member, which I had been part of before, but I really stepped away from everything. And Madeline Guanazzo, who was one of the co-founders, she wanted to retire. And so she asked me if I would step into her role as director of training, which was such a huge honor to be like, hey, you've been around. I trust you. Please take this baby in a way from me. And then she completely retired and I was able to purchase her shares of the business in January. So now I'm a co-owner and the director of training at Cuddlist.com.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
I thought you were one
of
the owners.
It's a little bit of a Cinderella story in a way of like, oh, like how I thought this was a modality that I would get trained in. And it's just a stepping stone is to do something else down the way. And to kind of come back full circle to where this is really the bulk of my work. I never thought that when I first started. It was just kind of this, oh, I want to be a sex educator. And this is kind of a thing I can do because I'm a mom and I'm used to cuddling. And it was a new modality. And it was an easy access point for me at the time. And then to really have a whole different relationship with the work now, 10 years later, is... It's really touching to look back on, honestly.
Yeah. And there's something about you that is felt. I can sense something energetically about you with how you are holding this work with like wisdom and respect for how sacred the permission is to be allowed to touch people, you know, as a professional service. As in therapy, we're so, in school at least, we're so sensitive and warned about touch. And, you know, many therapists would never touch their clients at all. So by background, are you a therapist yourself?
I'm not, though I get confused as one often. I was just at the ASEC sex therapy conference a couple of weeks ago, and one of my colleagues goes, are you certified? And I said, no, I can't be. I'm not a therapist. He goes, you're not? I just always thought you were. Nope, not a therapist. I just hang out with y'all a lot. So
yeah. Well, it's good to know for context.
A little bit of a therapy geek.
Yeah. People who are listening who are therapists who are like, you know, just trying to place the frame that you're bringing. So why don't you tell us, if you will, a little more about what Cuddlist is?
Sure. So Cuddlist.com is a training organization to train and certify practitioners in platonic touch and what is required to hold that space in a trauma-informed way with great boundaries and communication. And we kind of have our method, right? We have the Cuddlist method that we teach to our practitioners, and they have to really have a wholehearted yes to that method and understanding why it's important. And if we feel confident in them, we certify them. And then we are also a listing platform where clients can come to Cuddlist.com and see who is in their area. And then we also have a community support component that if people are certified, they are invited into a membership where they can have a lot of support on building their business. This is their own practice. Cuddlist doesn't take any part of their fees. We don't have any say in their work other than it needs to follow our code of conduct and abide by the Cuddlist method and those kinds of things. Beyond that, it's everyone's private practice.
That's cool that, you know, you're not being territorial about. Sometimes when we get these kinds of certifications,
yeah, I mean,
it can be a little much.
We won't let you go below $80 an hour. Like, we don't want to race to the bottom. We have ethics and a reporting system if there was ever an issue to come up, so that clients can, you know, let us know.
That's
good. We do background checks on our practitioners. We want to keep not just our practitioners safe. And that's what the training was kind of built around, was back in the really early days of professional cuddling, there wasn't training. And Madeline, who I mentioned earlier as the co-founder, she was doing one-on-one sessions and she was seeing a real need to teach the other practitioners in the field about boundaries and about communication with clients ahead of time and during sessions and what could be done to keep the practitioner safe, but also keep the clients safe. And so we are just continuing that forward.
That's great. I mean, I feel like I have so many questions in my mind about what this platonic cuddling service can provide for people. I mean, it's, you know, the obvious thing is we don't have anyone in our life who we're getting to touch or touch us, and, you know, cuddling just feels good. But
for some people,
yeah, can feel good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's so much, you know, there's like, oh, professional cuddling. Okay. I can kind of figure out what that is. But once you start to think about it, there are so many variables involved for the cuddler and the cuddlee. So what would be some of the reasons why someone might use this service?
Yeah, I think that the most common, for some people, it's just a luxury. Right? They know this is something that helps them feel better. There's so much co-regulation that can happen in that space. And, you know, nervous system support. And some people just know this is what makes their world tick in the right way, right? I think of it like you've got your regular massage appointment, and maybe you go get your nails done, and like it's just part of your self-care routine. But a lot of times people are coming because they're lonely. We know we've been talking about the loneliness epidemic, you know, all over the place. Anxiety, depression, you know, the real common human condition of, you know, I'm lonely. I don't have a person in my life. Maybe I'm lucky and I have a pet and that can really help. But sometimes, like I remember hearing clients say, like, I feel human here, right? Because we're engaged in a mutually connected relationship in that space. So, and people say, well, like, literally, when they're paying for a service, it's not like you're paying for a pizza delivery. Right? It's not about the customer is always right. Part of the Cuddlist method, which is specific to ours, there's some other really wonderful training organizations out there. I always like to say, like, shout out to Cuddle Sanctuary. They have a really wonderful program.
Okay.
I've only been trained by ours, so I am clearly biased, but also because I work in so much trauma, I really think ours is the I can't say I can create a safe space, but I can do everything I can to create the safest space, you know, without being able to control all factors. Our sessions are always client led. So the client, I'm never offering touch to a client. The client has to be able to articulate what they want. And that's some of the like hidden features of coming to a Cuddlist session is there is this skill set that gets taught as part of the structure of the session is like, hey, we have an opening agreement that we're always going to follow. And those handle like some of those big questions of like, well, what do you do if somebody gets aroused? Right? We have an agreement that we're not going to chase that. We understand that's a really common biological response, either to relaxation or the fact that maybe you haven't been touched in a long time. The tying of sex and touch is really a human response. Like that's not something that we're not expecting to happen, but we're agreeing that we're not going to chase it. And if it does come into the space, we're going to do something to change it, right? Like I'll say to a client, if I notice something, like if I'm uncomfortable, I've promised my client in the beginning, this is part number two, we have an agreement that we're never going to tolerate anything in session. So I say to the client, hey, in your session today, this is a session that's all for you, but know that I'm never going to say yes to something I'm not wholeheartedly a yes to, because you're not going to benefit from that. You're not going to feel that in my nervous system if I'm just gritting my teeth and getting through something, right? So if ever I'm uncomfortable and I say emotionally or physically, so my hip hurts because I've been laying in this one position too long, I'm not going to just hold it out because we've only got 10 more minutes left. I'm going to advocate for my own needs and say, you know, I need to shift something here. My hip is hurting. And if the conversation is uncomfortable, I promise you, I'm going to let you know so that we can change it. There is zero tolerating in the space. And then I ask the client if they can also do the same for me, right? So we're two adults meeting in this space and we're both agreeing to not do anything that we don't want to do. And that is the part, like sometimes clients will say like, well, I'm paying you to be here with me. You're paying for my time because this is my job. Just like, you know, you pay for your hairdresser, you pay for your therapist. This is our profession. I do this work because I love it and because I'm good at it, right? There's a benefit to paying for a professional in this space. I'm not tied to your personal life. If you want to talk to me about what's happening with, you know, grandma or whatever, it stays in that space just like it does in your therapy room, right? If I tolerated something, you would feel that in my body. I would feel a little rigid. Right? My heart rate might be elevated. There are subtle cues that I can't control that your nervous system is going to pick up on. Right? And so it's important that I only do the things that I really want to do. So that's the authentic connection part, is that we're figuring out where that Venn diagram overlaps of what you want and what I'm willing to do. Right? So that's where it's not ordering pizza. If a client said, I want to, let's say I had an issue with someone touching the back of my arm. I'm just going to throw out a thing. Like, I can't stand touch on the back of my arm. There's nowhere in the code of conduct that says that that's an inappropriate touch, right? We say we're not going to touch in the bikini zones, right? There's no touching of breasts, buttocks. We're not going to kiss, although I love a good kiss on the forehead. So that is part of my kissing, no kissing on the lips. But if you want to put a kiss on my forehead, that is the most tenderest, like, affection. Like, I love those. I will collect them till the day I die. Right. But if I don't want to be touched on the back of my arm, I still get to say, no, I don't like that touch. That doesn't work for me. It's not anything about you. So now we've got an opportunity for the clients to advocate and ask for what they want. And also the potential that they might have to navigate not getting what they want.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful opportunity, you know, and that's something that when that first can happen in a session, it deepens, I think, the relationship when you can. It's kind of like creating a rupture in a way, in that the client now has asked for something they didn't get a yes to. Now they can experience me still showing up for them. It doesn't change our relationship if we can talk about it and the client can, you know, come in with their feelings. Like, I just worry that I asked for the wrong thing and now you don't like me, and whatever can come up in that space. And we get to just navigate that together. It's a little laboratory. That's what I call it.
Yeah. And it's about touch, but it's also about reciprocal intrapersonal relationship. It's like, or is it interpersonal? Now I'm confusing myself, but
yeah,
it's like the reciprocal reciprocal aspect of not, I'm not just like, I give you X dollars and then you have to do whatever I want. You have to do whatever I want. What there, you are an object and I'm getting my needs met.
Yeah. And that's a red flag, right? For us. Yeah. And in, you know, we teach in our course, some, everybody gets to create their own practice, but here's some really good practices for screening the compatibility of a client. Right. And if a client just said, I don't want any, I hate to use the word emotional attachment because I feel like it's a little heavy for the space, but my clients get attached to me in some ways, right? We built this really trusting relationship with each other rather fast, honestly. The touch component builds a level of trust quicker than anything else, I think. It's a whole nother language. And so, like, that's different than, like, if you went to a massage therapist to get touched, right? That's one-way touch. We consider ours two-way touch because you might benefit from also holding me. I think about, I don't know if you've read, have you read the book, The Emotionally Unavailable Mother?
Believe it or not, I haven't read it. I know the book.
I read so many books. So in that book, what I liked about it, it's talking to therapists in the book. And they actually have like a prediction that therapists will start holding their clients. And I'm like, we'll see if that happens. In the meantime, I'm around, right? And I actually have a therapist that calls me her hands. And in the book, they talk about, like, when you have an emotionally absent mother, the desire to be held is so strong, right? And that's what a lot of people come to me. I have big mom energy, right? That's totally, I think that's what you pick up on for me is like, I'm just, I want to mom everyone, right?
In the appropriate way.
In an appropriate boundaried way, in a healthy mother relationship, right? Sometimes I say I'm more like a sorority sister or something too, but it's just as important in that book. They talk about giving those daughters the opportunity to do the holding. And that's, I think that's the human component. It's not just somebody is showing up and holding me, you know, being the big spoon, or, you know, I don't talk in a lot of cuddle position language usually, but like mama bear, I'm going to hold you from behind. And like, that's really important, but also getting the chance to have that flipped around, especially when I'm working with a cis male client where there's these gender roles in touch, and to get to flip that on its head and be like, what would it be like to be held instead of doing the holding as a man? Right. So it's such a great space to just practice almost the most basic level of humaning.
Right. I was really struck by this when we talked at the networker about, you know, I was thinking about a few things. You called it a lab, and that just feels so true, because it's like getting to where therapy can be an opportunity to practice relationship skills in the moment. You develop a relationship with your therapist, you practice asking for what you need, expressing how you feel, setting boundaries, dealing with other people's boundaries, and there's a huge power differential. The therapist has a lot of power, but we aren't there to experience the relationship and to practice those skills, you know? So it feels really like a unique opportunity to give and receive. I mean, therapy can be reciprocal, but the power dynamic does make it harder.
There's different,
because one person's saying, these are the policies. These are, you know, this is how it is.
And we have ours too, right? Like it's still a boundaried relationship, but it is a little bit closer. It's a little bit closer to an organic out in the wild relationship, but it's on rails a little bit, right? Because we do still have that, the fence is still there. And this is something that is often said in our world is we get paid for our boundaries, right? Like there's a study somewhere about kids on a playground, right? And if they have a fenced in playground, they actually venture out farther away from their teacher than if they're put on a playground that doesn't have any fence. They stay closer to their teacher, right? Mm. This is this, it's this interesting space of like, what if, I mean, most clients come in with that awareness of what are the quote unquote rules, right? Our agreements that we have in the space. But like, sometimes it's like, but what would you really want? What if you could just state it and know that you're not going to get it? Like, there's no shame, no judgment here. And sometimes that's part of the screening process is like, what are you, are you settling for a platonic experience? Because you're not going to be happy here. But if you're craving a platonic experience, which plenty of people are, this is a wonderful option.
Meaning, you know, if they're craving, if they're settling for it, they're really craving a non-platonic experience, or maybe a sexual experience or romantic.
Yeah. I think it's really one of the important things in my practice is, in my initial paperwork, the number one thing that I put at the top is we'll never have a relationship outside of this work, because it is a really tricky space. You know, there's love shared in the space as a verb, right? I care so deeply about everybody that I work with. And I, of course, they're going to care about me. And sometimes that's a question therapists ask about the work is like, what happens if somebody falls in love with you? And I'm like, there's some really cool, wonderful, deep work that can happen in that space. Mm. I know my limits, right? And especially if you're working in triad, what we call the triadic model, where you're in collaboration, where I get to talk to, let's say you and I had a client together and we had a release of information signed so that we could talk to each other. And the client's like going to you and saying, I'm having a really tough time with my feelings for Michelle. That's a wonderful opportunity for y'all to talk that out.
And I think, you know, there's something about touch. I'm sure you will be able to say much more about this than what I know, because I'm just kind of going with my own experience, basically. Mm-hmm. But there's something about touch where the energy shifts, you know, like if you and I are talking, let's say we were back at the network or we were talking, we're having a great dialogue, but then you put your hand on my arm or something, it does shift. Mm-hmm. The intimacy of our connection, I guess. And I wonder.
Or if you didn't want me to touch your arm.
Right.
It can shift our intimacy also the other direction.
Right. It can either bring us closer in that moment, or it can feel violating, uncomfortable. Yeah.
Yeah. And that awareness is a huge, like, just a people skill.
Of course. Yeah. And I mean, you know. The boundaries, you mean?
Well, I think even just the picking up on the energy shift.
Oh, yeah.
Right? If you're somebody who maybe struggles with some of those, maybe it's social cues, right? If you have a place where you can start to practice and notice what is your ability to pick up on that, maybe you learn how to navigate those spaces differently and you don't just make that touch. Maybe you learn that what you need is to ask, would it be okay if I touched your arm right now? You know, it's like figuring out what is your cheat sheet. That's it might be hard to do that in just a general and out in the world with your friends. You could. I mean, if you had some great friends that understood that you're just trying to feel out how to have the best experience with another human. But also you might go to a cuddlist and be like, I'm noticing that I have a hard time asking for, like, I forget to ask. Great. We could just set up a whole session where you have to ask for every shift of contact. I don't necessarily do that normally. Our agreement is that we're going to speak up if we're uncomfortable, though we practice so much direct communication that we usually get into a rhythm of asking. And I'm never asking, but if a client decided to, I don't know, pet my arm while we were laying next to each other, as long as I'm a yes to that, I'm not going to say anything because I think it feels nice. But there are other people that don't like repetitive, like petting motion, right? So when I'm cuddling the client and I notice my instinct is to pet them, I ask them, how would it feel if I pet your arm right now? Because some people don't like that. And I'm noticing an instinct to pet you while we're laying here. And so I just want to see how that would feel for you. And they're like, I don't know, let's try it. And I can say, they can say in that space really easily, yep, nope, don't like it.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to be like, what's weird? What's wrong with you? You're so weird. Yeah. Why don't you like that? Right? Like, it's just a, it's a really soft place to do those kinds of experiments. I didn't know as a cuddler, I remember being in a session and somebody touched me really light touch. And I was like, oh, I like that. Put that on my list, right? Like I came into this work not being a huge touch person. Even now we joke, like I'm around a lot of my colleagues and they want to cuddle all the time. Like all the time. They're always like wanting to touch. Can I, is it okay if I rub your shoulders right now? Like they're always touching. And I had this moment recently where I went, you know what, guys, I have to confess something to you. I'm actually not a very cuddly person outside of the container of my work, unless I'm feeling really dysregulated. And then I might grab my husband and be like, can we cuddle for a little while? I just need to get grounded again. I'm not like that. I am the person that will hold your hand at a table if we're having a deep conversation, because I feel that physical contact is really important in that space. But I'm not that person. And so it's just, it's interesting how everybody has their own touch needs and figuring out what that owner's manual looks like for you. If you've never been in a relationship, there's another example, right? And you want to practice that skill of physical intimacy, not sexual intimacy, but physical and emotional intimacy. Cuddle session can be a great space for that.
So how would that work? Like if someone had never been in a relationship and they want to, but they feel like they don't even know where to begin. They want to discover how it would feel right to touch and be touched in a relationship, not sexually. What would their session look like?
It's funny. People always ask, like, what does a session look like? I'm like, they're all so different. But here's the interesting part is what I've heard from, there's some people that see Cuddlist and they see a lot of us. And it's almost like Pokemon where they collect them all, you know, like, oh, I'm going to be in this city. I want to see Michelle, or I'm going to be in this city. I want to see Keely or whatever. Right. So what they're always going to see is a consistency in that there's always the same opening agreement is, well, it's about the same. We all have our own version of it. There's always the code of conduct and it's always client led. So they'll say like, it's really, there is a consistency across the board, but honestly you come in and then after that opening agreement, I say, how do you want to connect? That's the same question I have with everyone, right? So if you came in and you said, I really don't know because I've never cuddled with anyone before. Or sometimes I see clients that had a really rough childhood and they can't conceptualize what the options are, right? So I bring in my toolbox of the coaching side of the work and say, okay, how do you want to feel? Well, I want to feel cared for. Okay, what might that look like? Do you think that this is something you want to do standing up? Are we seated? Are we laying down? We just start to kind of take all the little components of what a cuddle position might look like, right? And it's like, okay, well, I want to be seated. Okay, are we facing each other? Are we facing away from each other? Well, actually, I'm kind of nervous to look you in the eyes. Maybe facing away from you would be a really good idea. Like, so we can break it down into all these little components. Right. And so as a starter, and you haven't had a relationship, you don't know what physical intimacy would look like for you. Let's try some different things, right? Like let's try eye gazing. That might be a senior level for some people, and other people, they might go, well, that felt really comfortable. Great. Check. Put that on your list of things that you like. And then it's like, okay, do you, let's try me holding you. Right? That might be the next place that we could start. And how does that look? Am I in front of you? Am I behind you? Am I next to you? Okay. How does that feel? I think it would feel better if we were actually, you were holding me and I was facing you. Okay. Let's try that. And it's just these little tweaks that we can make. Or like, I might say, okay, that feels good, but how would it feel better? It's like, so all these are, I think, skill sets that take into a relationship really well. Like if you think about the person that's never had a relationship, and so let's just say they have no at least consensual sexual experience. I'll say that in preface because the numbers are so out there. Not like it's a shift of intention that takes that same closeness and safety feeling, and you've got the safety and the proximity, it takes a shift of intention to change if this is going to be a platonic experience or a non-platonic experience, right? So it's almost like a starting point just to get your nervous system comfortable with being next to another person. There's so many ways to titrate this down into little micro experiences that can play across the board of why are people coming in? Well, if you're anxious and you're coming in, you get a chance to experience another person's regulated nervous system. And we know that our nervous systems talk to each other, right? So sometimes I've called myself a nervous system coach, right? If you're coming in and you do have a background in sexual violence, what does it feel like to be in a space where I only want to know what you want and I want you to tell me when you don't want that anymore? And to get a chance to practice that, right? Maybe you've never had wanted touch. When I hear people say, I don't like hugs, I respect the hell out of that, right? But if they want to figure out if there's a way that they could enjoy a hug, I can work with them on that because there's something there that's making them not enjoy it. And it might be something that we can work through.
Sorry for interrupting there, but I have several people I work with who say, I just don't like being touched. They don't say they don't like hugs. They say, I don't like being touched. And there's a common theme I've noticed among, and it's not people with a particular type of trauma that I've noticed. I mean, it's hard to say because a lot of my clients have the same kinds of trauma, but it doesn't seem to be specific to sexual trauma, I'll say, that people will say, when I think of being touched, I just recoil. And of course, if you think that's just how you are and you're not concerned about it, you don't want to change it, fine. But if you did, would that be something that they could work with?
Absolutely. And I think some of that is that they don't know what the options are.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, whatever that touch was that made you have that story about yourself that you don't like touch. Maybe you don't, like I said, maybe you don't like the repetitive touch. Maybe you don't like light touch. Maybe you really like a firm, solid, non-movement touch. Like there's so many kinds of touch. And I never thought about those things before I got into this work. I never thought about it. I know. And now I know that wherever I'm at, like if I'm anxious, that grounding touch, that solid, just, I don't need you to pet my back or anything. I need you to just squeeze me tight. Like think about a baby and how we roll them up in the little burrito, you know, blanket compression. What does that do for a nervous system? Right. And figuring out what you need in different times. I love compressing bodies and just feeling that weight. It feels super cool when they get off of you and you suddenly feel really light. Like it's an interesting contrast phase. Yeah. But it's also an interesting opportunity. We haven't touched on this body image work that happens in cuddling spaces. What does it feel like to let someone be close to your body?
There's so much talk about women's hormonal health, but most women are left even more confused about what it means for them and what to do about it. This confusion ends now. Hormone Harmony is a game changer for women struggling with hormonal imbalances that leave them exhausted both physically and mentally. It only contains science-based ingredients that bring back comfort, energy, clarity, confidence, and a sense of balance. Happy Mammoth, the company behind this phenomenal formula, has helped over 2.4 million women get their lives back and feel like themselves again after years or even decades of hormonal imbalances. What makes this formula unlike anything else on the market is that it tackles multiple hormonal imbalances at the same time, creating a cascade of benefits all throughout the body and mind, leading to better mood, more energy, and deep comfort. The reviews are unbelievable. Over 50,000 women are raving about better energy, deeper sleep, feeling more balanced and calm, reduced bloating, and more. And for a limited time, you can get 15% off on your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code chat at checkout. Today's episode is sponsored by Psychotherapy Networker and PESI. If you're a therapist, be sure to check out the partner page, which is linked in the show notes, where you can get discounted trainings with previous Therapy Chat guests like Courtney Armstrong, Dr. Leslie Korn, Dr. Ariel Schwartz, Dr. Tammy Nelson, Dr. Janina Fisher, Rebecca Case, Dr. Peter Levine, Dr. Lindsay Gibson, Deb Dana, Lori Gottlieb, and many, many others. You'll find the link in the show notes to my partner page with PESI and Psychotherapy Networker, where you can find all these discounted training. If you need CEs, this is a great place to go.
We all know how hard it can be to eat healthy without feeling like we're giving up flavor or fun. Washington Red Raspberries are a clean, simple, and seriously delicious way to add more nutrition to your day. They're American grown, picked at peak ripeness, and frozen within hours to lock in nutrients like fiber, antioxidants, and vitamin C. And they have no added sugar, just fruit as nature intended. And the best part, they're being harvested and frozen right now by family farms in Washington State. So when you buy American grown frozen raspberries, you're getting fresh off the field flavor all year long. I like using frozen American red raspberries in my smoothies. They taste fresh, juicy, and full of flavor because they're grown in nutrient-rich soil and frozen at peak ripeness. Whether you're trying to clean up your snacks or build better meals, these berries are a total win. Want to discover new ways to use American frozen red raspberries and get more details on where you can grab a bag? Go to redraz.org. That's redraz.org. Next time you're at Costco, Kroger, Meijer, or Winco Foods, make sure to check out products made with Washington red raspberries and be sure to look for product of the U.S. on the bag.
Therapy Notes is consistently transforming the way therapists manage their practices with continuous updates designed to save money and improve efficiency. Their latest game changer, Therapy Fuel, a powerful and fully integrated suite of AI tools that streamline documentation so you can focus more on your clients. With AI features that help by generating progress notes from summaries or transcriptions, creating contact notes directly from clients' secure messages, and automated summaries of client history forms, Therapy Notes users are already reporting hours of saved time and energy. Some other recent feature improvements include automated recurring client payments, electronic secondary insurance billing, and their constantly expanding library of outcome measures. The best time to give Therapy Notes a try is now. Sign up for your free trial by going to therapynotes.com, clicking Start My Free Trial, and accessing your first 2 months free with the promo code CHAT. See why Therapy Notes is the most trusted EHR for behavioral health professionals today. This is interesting that you brought this up because as you were talking, I mean, I've been in a long-term relationship. I've been married for almost 30 years. So I have someone accessible to cuddle with when I want to most of the time. And some of the things I'm thinking about as you're talking, I'm thinking about the way my partner likes to hug or the way, you know, the repetitive petting, you know, the different touch things that we engage with that aren't sexual. And then I'm thinking about the cuddlist session. And when I noticed that when I was thinking about it, when you were describing it, like, first of all, it was fascinating when you were saying that if the person came in and they had never had a relationship and just the way you would start it off and help them explore what the options even are. So I'm picturing myself in this and I'm imagining going in there and being with you. And I find you very interesting and charismatic and like an appealing kind of person, just like, I want to talk to you. So with that in mind, as you're talking about these different sort of prompts of what would you like to try? And I picture them, I'm like, oh my gosh, can I picture myself like letting someone hold me or someone I don't really know, you know, like I don't already have a long-term trusting relationship with, or even sitting really close together. I'm like, gosh, I love cuddling, but if I were to do this, what would I even do? Would I like it? Or would I not know what to do with myself? And I kind of feel like I would go into this and be like, oh, and it just seems like it's something about, you know, energetic space boundaries and proprioception. And so when you mentioned body image, it's like, there's something about like, for me, when I imagine it, I think for myself, it's just coming up as a very vulnerable feeling. Yeah. So it's not really about body image, but it feels like it could be like relate to that in a way where it's like, oh, like,
yeah.
Our bodies, like it's too exposed in some way.
I think that's part of the initial consultation call in figuring out where are you coming into this work at. There's something about my clients. They know they want to try this. Mm-hmm. They're almost 100% apprehensive about it. Most people that come in have never done anything like this before in their life. And I always tell them, I'm a little anxious too. Like it takes me about 3 minutes to figure out what our energy is going to be like together. Even though I've shared a Zoom call with my clients before they show up, there is that, oh gosh, how are we going to connect? What is this going to feel like? That's a mutual experience. between us. But if you, there's like, there's the client that is hungry for touch.
Right? Touch starved, as they're
touch
saying.
Touch starved. Yes. And that is an interesting space. They might be touch starved and they want to dive in and overeat.
Right.
That is a thing I did not know when I first started this work. That just letting them dive in and overeat wasn't necessarily the best way for me to support them. Mm-hmm. Right. So I have to come in with a little bit of my own wisdom too, to say, I might not say this out loud. It might be like, okay, you say that right after I say, how do you want to connect? They're like, can we be a plate of spaghetti together where we are entangled and entwined? I might have to put on my professional best judgment hat and say, you know, that feels like a little more than I'm ready for. Is there something else we could do to get started to kind of help temper that a little bit? Because it could be like, I'm just going to gorge myself on touch. And then what does the other side of that look like? It looks like a lot of an intimacy hangover. And that's something I had to learn with time. And that's something, you know, in the first iteration of the Cuddlist training, we didn't talk about that. Right. And that's something now we've had 10 years of experience in inside of our advisory board, reworking the training to take in our 10 years of experience as a group of, you know, a handful of people. We have a lot more information now. So Michelle of 2016 would have been like, yeah, let's get like spaghetti. I love touch. This is great. Right. The Michelle of today, because of the nature of the kind of clients that I bring in, they walk into my office and I say, you sit where you want to sit. They pick a spot. I go, okay, where do you want me to sit? And I put them in choice right from the minute they walk into my space. Right. So if they're like, I would like you to sit in your office chair, or I would like you to stand at the door. Great. Awesome. I want to meet you there. They may never want to have touch in our time together. It may be a space for them to, I want them to be real, right? I want them to, if they don't warm up to the idea that it feels like a good thing for them, that is winning in my book, that they have taken their bodily autonomy and agency and put it to use. That is not a, you failed the cuddle session. A cuddle session never has to include any touch, right? So if you're like, actually, could we just like get to know each other a little bit? Yeah, I can do that from my office chair if you want. Right. And then let's say, like, what are your goals for today? What would you like to get to today? We might be able to figure out a game plan to make that happen if that's really important to you. Or maybe it's just, how would you like to feel by the end of the session? I've started to bring more options into my space. Like, I think of this as a great space to kind of nurture our inner children. So maybe it's more of a connection time where we could color together if that would feel good to you, or a simple board game, or there's so many ways to connect that maybe are not touch. But if you get to where you want touch, I'm super open to it. It's an opportunity for touch. It's not a guarantee that you have to touch, or that what you ask for is going to be necessarily a mutual yes.
It's really interesting. It's clearly very intimate, but it feels very, there's like a tenderness along with the clear boundaries and clear communication. It feels like it's a very sensitive experience.
Well, it's very personalized.
Yeah.
And I mean, I come in with my own journey included so much healing just from being loved for who I am and not who I'm not. Mm. That was the repair for me. Was to be that unconditional positive regard. I was granted that by other people. And that was not the household that I grew up in, you know? So I think of this as a space for me to pay it forward. And I don't know where you need to be met, but I'm super interested in finding it out.
Do you have enough time for us to talk for a little bit more and talk about how, like, if someone has experienced sexual trauma, what would be some of the expectations of what they could either work through or work on using professional cuddling?
I mean, part of it is just sharing another nervous system, right? I mean, it's because of how I think of it as the laboratory space, it might just be being in a room with a, like, okay, while at my home office, I have a bed in my space. When I'm traveling, I always get a suite because those clients aren't going to want to go lay down in a bed with me.
Right.
Right. And if they
might
here,
even be afraid if they see a bed.
Mm-hmm. And that's something we have to talk about, right? Is like, that's part of that intake process is maybe this isn't the best place to meet first. I've been really fortunate. One time I had a therapist, like, let me use her office to build that relationship with the client before we would move into anything that remotely looked like a bed space. And I set my bed up to look more like a day bed. And I try to do things to, I keep a very trauma-informed space as you can always see the door. There's the exit path. I'm mindful of all those things, but I'm also mindful, like I said, when I travel into Baltimore, I just set up in a hotel and I always get a suite because I don't want there to be any expectation or feeling of pressure that cuddling has to happen in a bed. We cuddle on the couch all the time, right? And there's so many different things that can happen for those types of clients. Like that, me talking about compression, what is it like to have a body lay on top of your body? Now, this is not the beginning of the work at all. This is so far down the line, but to have the experience of just another body on top of yours and you being able to tell that person, all right, I'm done. Thank you. That's enough for me. Right. And sometimes I've used that as a space to practice it. Tell me no again. Right. Let's do it again. Let's start over. Okay. Tell me no. And then you get to feel it in your body, me honoring your no, thanking you for your no. Like that's the reparative part of it. And like, even just knowing that you've had an experience that wasn't the other experience,
mm-hmm.
right? A new co-host, some people have said, like, when I think about that physical feeling, now I have another option of another person I can have that memory with that is not the negative memory that I had before. Mm. It might be walking into a space that was a familiar space for your abuse. And just being able to walk into it with another person and be like, okay, like noticing I'm, you know, whether it's just noticing that, like telling your body, like, look, like I can be in this space and I'm not in danger right now. It's just another opportunity for that corrective emotional experience.
Yeah.
And that's where maybe you can't do that as a therapist, but you can be like, hey, Michelle, this is what's coming up in session. This might make sense to engage in. This specific cuddle position might be a reparative space for them or whatnot. Mm. I think of it as kind of like, I often say physical therapy for your emotional health, but I guess maybe it's more like occupational therapy in some ways, but and we're not therapists. And this is where I love the triadic model so much is that I'm not here to do the processing with you of what's happening right in our space. Like, that's not my role. And having
okay,
really...
so you don't talk about the struggle that they're having in moment.
I do. I'm not going to ignore something that's happening in the moment, but there is way more processing that needs to happen afterwards.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Like a lot of times I see clients, like when I'm traveling that route out to Baltimore, is like every 12 weeks, and they might see me for one or two sessions. And then they've got a lot of good stuff to talk to their therapist about. Whether it's what happened directly with me, maybe they noticed they dissociated at a certain point, something came up, a new memory came up or whatever. There's a lot of new information, even in just a 90-minute session, that can come up for a lot of clients if they've got some kind of attachment wound or SA history there's so much there that can happen in a good way.
Yeah. I just feel like the navigating the boundaries and finding our no or yes when, you know, some people who are survivors of sexual trauma are, you know, they kind of may not be in a relationship. They may have a kind of a small world and where there's a lot of control over what to expect. And when everything seems okay, because they're keeping all the triggers out, you know, but I mean, it seems okay, but it's also like isolated and
highly
feels
controlled
lonely.
Environment.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's like little tolerance of when it isn't within their control, you know? And I mean, it's like we do whatever we have to do to help ourselves survive and recover. And yeah. We ultimately want to be able to be in relationships, you know, and have them be safe. But the other thing is like with sexual trauma and a lot of attachment trauma too, the no can be suppressed.
Yeah.
Right.
I grew up in a household that no was not celebrated. Compliance was celebrated, I guess. I think about like the yes and no question isn't really up here.
Yeah.
Right. Our body knows, like it's not a decision. It is like, if you can learn how to tap back into your body and realize that it is a physical state,
yeah.
Right? Yes and no is where you are physically. That for a lot of people, especially if you have childhood sexual abuse, that was trained out of you.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so I see numbness, just body numbness, where they didn't realize how numb they were,
mm-hmm.
you know, and like bringing all of that back online is amazing to witness. Like, I think people sometimes say, boy, Michelle, your work is so dark sometimes. Like, how do you do it? And I'm like, I'm on the light side of this. Like, I'm in the watching them rebuild their life in a new way and get to have new experiences. Like, it's awesome to be part of that team. You know, people are amazing people. Like, I just watch the resiliency and the, we think we're stuck. And mm-hmm. I get to watch so many people get unstuck and have robust, loving relationships and wonderful people in their lives. But that's what I think about it is like, this is a place to experience what healthy relating can look like as far as direct and honest communication, having people respect your wishes.
Right.
That's like, that's the counter of everything that I grew up in.
Exactly. And coercive parenting has been, you know, a pretty dominant form of parenting throughout the 20th century, at least. And yeah, so I guess the last question, because there's not more time, is if someone wanted to come work with a Cuddlist because they want help accessing their no, is that a barrier if they struggle to say no? Is it a barrier to getting started?
No, I think that's that question of like, I'm going to promise to take care of my needs. Can you do that too? The honest answer for a lot of people is no. I don't know that I can do that. And I say, thank you for letting me know that. Like, we're going to work on that. I think you're going to see that improve. I think it's more important that they're honest, that they don't have a strong, some people have a really strong no and they have a really hard time saying yes to things.
Right.
Right. There's both sides of that coin.
That's very true.
And so it's like, what can we do to help you have a space that is all about you? Because that might be really hard for some people to just even ask for what they need or identify what they need or want. Like, it's a really great question I've heard asked, like, okay, so how do people learn what they want in their life? Like, big sweeping, like, what do I want with my life? And I'm like, have you figured out how to give yourself a bathroom break when you want one? Like, or when you need one, have you talked yourself out of even fulfilling that need for yourself? That's like where we have to start.
Yeah. Being tuned into our own needs is not as simple as it seems, for sure.
Yeah.
And it feels like that's really, you know, I think that's what I was really inspired about after originally meeting you, is just how this could be a way to negotiate things that are part of being able to be relational that we often go around or use sex to solve whatever the thing is instead of this in between. It's not in between. It's just a different kind of,
I think we have different coping mechanisms to get our needs met. Right. And that's another, it's another fun demographic is like the person that's in the dating world. We hear this, we hear the advice, like don't go shopping hungry. Like don't go grocery shopping when you're hungry because you're going to make really, really poor choices in the grocery store. What does it look like to go into dating when you're getting some basic touch needs met outside of using sex for it? I used it. I totally used sex to get affection.
I think many men only know sex as the way to have emotional intimacy or touch.
Yeah. And that's, I mean,
and many women.
It goes back to, do you want to work on it? Right. That goes back to that question of, are you settling for platonic in spaces with me? Right. Some people are going to say, I don't know how to have closeness and it not be sex. Well, do you want to work on that? Because if you don't want to work on it, I don't have any interest of holding this really uncomfortable space with you, right? Like, there's a lot of things that I appreciate about the world, but I do not appreciate being in a space with a bunch of sexual energy when I am not interested in it.
Yeah.
And I made that mistake early in my career of saying yes to a lot of clients that really were not, they were settling surely for platonic. It's icky. It does not feel good. Right. But if you come to me and you're like, I don't know how to not gravitate to the sex, I will work through that with you because I'm going to hold that boundary that you're paying me for. And that's where I think that's where having a therapist and collaboration on that will help the client understand the value when they go, this is too hard. I'm frustrated. I'm leaving, you know, feeling kind of the, I think of it as like the avoidant attachment person that's like, oh, this felt really close and that's scary. And they only know how to do close with sex.
Yeah.
Right. If they don't have a therapist and they're not working on something by being in the space, they're never coming back.
Yeah.
Right. This is a lot of emotional intimacy and that is not easy for the person that doesn't have the support and want to work through their fear of emotional intimacy.
Yeah. It's so much more than it looks like on the surface. I'm so grateful.
I want to say this. You can make a cuddle session, not this big, I'm coming in for this therapeutic modality. It can be, this is the space where I get to just relax and I get to be taken care of in it. And I have this lovely connection with my cuddler and I go about my day and I feel energized and I feel refreshed and recharged, right? And it's also an opportunity space that if you need to work on your yeses and your nos, and if you need to maybe practice coming in and not having any touch because you want to practice your no that day. Or it's just that playground. It's just a playground. It doesn't have to.
Be so serious.
It does not have to be, you know, a whole, you know, therapeutic modality.
Well, it's obviously to me just seems like this big mystery. So there's a whole gamut of ways that one can benefit from professional cuddling.
Yeah.
I am very grateful to you for taking the time to talk about this and explain so much and answer my questions. And I mean, I still feel like we barely scratched the surface of what your service is. And I think that's one of those things that you probably just have to experience it too.
It's such a weird thing because it's not like I can say, this is what it does, right?
Right. Right.
It's like, what do you need? And we can find a way to kind of touch on that need. It's just being a human in another human space. So anything that is human related is possible kind of thing. And so it makes it very nebulous. Like, how do you say what it is mm-hmm. and what it isn't? I don't have an answer for that, but I do appreciate your curiosity and it probably is making a lot of brains fire as they listen to this. And yeah, if you think about it, whatever that is, it's probably possible to touch on it in this space because it's just two human beings.
Well, I hope that this conversation is inspiring a lot of people to get curious. I mean, that's really exactly what happened with me. We talked, I asked you a bunch of questions, and then it's just been percolating in my mind like, wow, this is something really fascinating and potentially very deep and broad at the same time. So yeah, I'm inspired, and I hope that those who listen to this will be like, well, maybe if I can, maybe it'll help me with this, or maybe I can ask if it would be good for that.
Yeah, I think I appreciate just the space to talk about it. Maybe therapists will start to get more curious about it. Clients start to get more curious about it. Other, you know, people looking to expand their practice as far as modality offerings. Clearly, therapists are never going to have a cuddle session with their clients, but that you're hitting a broad group of therapeutic worlds, I'm assuming, in this podcast, because mm-hmm. I listen to you and I'm not a therapist. So
thanks for listening.
I'm sure your base will take it in lots of different ways.
Yeah. And it'll reach the ears that it needs to reach, I believe. So, Michelle, where can people learn more? Do you want people to learn more about Cuddlist or about your work specifically?
Both? Cuddlist.com primarily. I mean, my practice itself is the Human Connection Lab. So they're welcome to go check that out. But we talked primarily about Cuddlist today. Clearly, we talked a little bit about my practice too, but yeah.
Yeah, well, I'll include both of those links in the show notes. And you've mentioned, you know, this podcast reaches people all around, but you've mentioned that you're coming to Baltimore. And are you coming? I know this, but I don't remember. What are you coming for?
I come in.
You come periodically.
I come see my clients about every 12 weeks in the Baltimore, okay. DC area. I usually set up shop right around BWI, and occasionally I throw together a get together for some professionals when I have the extra spoons and the gap in my schedule. I try to create a really tight schedule to optimize. I don't charge my clients to come into town. I just see a group of them at once, and I call it the reunion tour because I've worked with a lot of these clients for quite some time, and I really care about people when they come into my life, and it's nice that we can continue this relationship beyond me living in the area. So I love having little remote spots that I get to work out of. So I'm here in San Diego, but also in Baltimore. Also started being in Pittsburgh. I think I'm going to add Portland. Just had a call with a therapist yesterday about maybe setting something up as a regular rotation into Montana because it's such a touch desert. There's all sorts of things always brewing.
Yeah. I'm thinking you're missing out on, why not, like, you know...
Say it.
Well, France or Mexico, mean, or something, you know, exotic or beautiful.
Well, because I have to come in so regularly, and it's got to, you know, traveling across country is one
thing. Must be affordable.
I also still, I mean, while I don't have kids at home, I do have a husband and an aging dog that, you know, I want to reconnect with once in a while. But I love traveling to see my clients, and I get paid to love people. It's like, I'm so excited to land in Baltimore on Thursday and reconnect with that group of people. And then I'm so excited to head up to Pittsburgh. And then I'm so excited. Like, there's just always the next exciting spot to love people, I guess.
Yeah. I get it. I love seeing my community out in where they are too. And I just enjoy it because I enjoy them, and it feels good.
Yeah. And it's good to be helpful, you know?
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for spending this time with me and our audience today. And I can't wait to see where it goes and stay connected with you.
Absolutely. I look forward to seeing you at the next conference.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Therapy Notes is the highest rated EHR, practice management, and billing software for mental health professionals. Its all-in-one platform is designed to streamline all aspects of your practice, from connecting with clients via secure messages to scheduling, notes, billing, and more. You can trust Therapy Notes has you covered. And one of the best parts? 24/7 customer service with a live person. It's beyond easy to get help over the phone or by email at any time of day from their knowledgeable and friendly representatives. The best time to give Therapy Notes a try is now. Sign up for your free trial by going to therapynotes.com, clicking Start My Free Trial, and accessing your first 2 months free with the promo code CHAT. See why Therapy Notes is the most trusted EHR for behavioral health professionals today.
Thank you for listening to Therapy Chat with your host, Laura Reagan, LCSWC. For more information, please visit therapychatpodcast.com.